Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, September 18, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The latest death toll in Libya's floods approaches 12,000 as search and rescue continues.
The immediate need on the ground right now of the search and rescue. We don't have the caliber of people who are specialized in rescues from the sea.
Morocco continues to dig itself out of the rubble of a 6.8 magnitude earthquake. Ethiopia denies al-Shabaab ambush attack on its military convoy. 94 hostages are free from ADF terrorists in DRC after months of detention. The UN General Assembly gets underway today, Monday, in New York. But will Africa this time get a seat on the United Nations Security Council?
This matter, we are going to raise it until we have come together as a strong continent. At the moment, Africa is still a continent of beggars.
And today is World Patient Safety Day. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The death toll in Libya's floods disaster continues to fluctuate from day to day. Reuters News quotes the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs as saying the latest death toll could exceed 11,000. The World Health Organization is also concerned about a possible disease outbreak. Meanwhile, the search for bodies and survivors continues in the hardest-hit city, Derna. Hamid Bakar is a Libyan-American based in Atlanta, Georgia. His two brothers went to eastern Libya to assist with the rescue effort. Hamid tells me the immediate need of the people in Derna is search and rescue.
I just called my brother to give me the input from yesterday and today. I haven't talked to him in 2 days because of the lines, the phone lines. I know the recovery, they are evacuating everybody. The only people in the city right now is the military, the Egyptian military, and the Libyan military. They can't get into Derna. Most of the people, they have to load all their airplanes. They're loading all the stuff from Saudi Arabia, from United Arab Emirates, even Qatar sent some stuff. So they have a station area outside Derna from 90 miles to 300 miles east and west of Derna. And there is many other small towns are destroyed too, but they did not get the publicity the big cities get. And many people have died of those communities too. Here we lump them all under Derna, which is it's a good thing. All the help is going to everybody, not only Derna.
When you talk to your brothers, what do they tell you is the immediate need of the people on the ground?
The immediate need on the ground right now of the search and rescue. Food, we have plenty of food. Money, we have plenty of money. We don't have the caliber of people who are specialized in rescues from the sea, because many of those people, their bodies went to the sea, and now they are under the dirt in the sea. So it's going to take some time. It's not something that can be done immediately. What we need right now is the caliber of people who know how to do rescue. People don't trust the military from Egypt or the military from Libya. Even though the military from Libya, I have to give them a credit, a couple days ago, the people who used to fight a war against each other, today they are rescuing people together. So that's a very good point for the future.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Likewise, may God bless you, brother. Thank you for your reaching out.
Hamid Bakar is a Libyan-American based in Atlanta, Georgia. His two brothers are in East Libya to assist with search and rescue work. The people of Morocco continue to pick themselves up from the 6.8 magnitude earthquake that struck the High Atlas Mountains on September 8, killing 2,900 people. Reporter Lisa Bryant has just visited the most affected areas. She tells me that the Moroccans are focused on burying the dead and finding housing for those who lost their homes.
In terms of finding live bodies, that's essentially over. It's partly because of the nature of the earthquake itself and the buildings. The buildings are, you know, easily collapsible. Unlike, for example, the Turkey earthquake, where there were pockets of air in the structure of the buildings. The ones that, you know, sort of fell, collapsed in this area, the High Atlas, they're made of just traditional methods. So basically, a lot of people just died instantly. So in terms of the relief effort, it's really finding dead bodies. And right now, a lot of the international teams have pretty much gone home. So now I think that the government and the population is turning to what's next. And what's next is immediately burying the bodies. And then the longer term question is, what's going to happen to these thousands of people who don't have homes or have really basic homes that they can't go back to right now because they're scared?
How do you think the ordinary Moroccans responded to this tragedy?
It was absolutely amazing, I have to say. It was very heartwarming. I mean, just for reporters like me, but obviously for the victims of the earthquake, people have been coming out en masse. I mean, you go to any place and there are these tent camps. Some of them are set up by volunteers. I met a guy who was a tour guide. He's clearly out of business right now because people are afraid to go to the High Atlas right now. But he's decided to, he helped set up a tent camp. Moroccans from all across the country are coming with busloads of things that people need, food, medication, you know, bedding, blankets, things to keep them warm at night because it's quite cold in the mountains. So it's been quite an overwhelming response, and that is very heartwarming for the people who really have nothing. People are also very proud of their government. They say, we can do it ourselves. Now, some of the relief efforts that have come in, offers like the French offer, were turned down for better or for worse. But there has been an overwhelming response of generosity. Whether it's going to last in the long term when people are going to be facing a hard winter is another matter.
Lisa, thank you very much. A pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much, James.
That was reporter Lisa Bryant speaking with us from Morocco. The Al-Shabaab militant group on Sunday claimed responsibility for an ambush against an Ethiopian military convoy in the southwestern Bakool region of Somalia. Al-Shabaab claimed to have killed 167 Ethiopian soldiers, destroyed military vehicles, and seized a cache of weapons and ammunition. A Somali official confirmed the ambush and said the militants lost as many as 50 fighters. Meanwhile, Ethiopia's ambassador to Somalia, Mukhtar Mohamed Ware, tells reporter Harun Maruf of the U.S. Somali Language Service that the Al-Shabaab claim is a propaganda.
They might try, but they cannot even fire for more than 10 minutes against Ethiopian Defense Forces. This is a professional army, very well organized, and it's always hitting hard when it comes to Al-Shabaab. So this is just mere propaganda against Ethiopia and against Ethiopian Defense Forces. I've seen on social media what they call crusaders. We are not crusaders. We are there under the African Union and the international community decision to support legitimate government of Somalia in its effort to establish peace in its country. So this is just mere propaganda.
So just to be clear, what are you saying is the propaganda? That they have killed 167 Ethiopian soldiers or that fighting has taken place? Which one is a propaganda? Which one is true? Which one is not true?
They might try. Always they have tried, but never succeeded in ambushing or attacking Ethiopian Defense Forces. What they are claiming to be that number, that's just a false propaganda that they are blowing for the consumption of their members and their supporters.
But did the attack take place? Did they ambush Ethiopian convoy?
I'm not sure. Just I have told you that they have released a statement, but I can't verify that because I am on leave.
Mukhtar Mohamed Ware is Ethiopia's ambassador to Somalia. He spoke with reporter Harun Maruf of the U.S. Somali Language Service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 18. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. This year's United Nations General Assembly gets underway today, Monday, in New York. According to the UN, world leaders will debate accelerating action on the 2030 agenda and its sustainable development goals towards peace and prosperity. For many African leaders, the issue of a seat on the UN Security Council is expected to feature prominently in their speeches, as it has in the past. This year, the BRICS and G20 groups expanded their African membership. Professor Sipho Sipe is the former Deputy Vice Chancellor for Institutional Support at the University of Zululand. He tells me he doesn't think Africa will get a UN Security Council seat anytime soon because, unlike the G20, the Security Council is about the exercise of military and economic power.
African countries labor under the illusion that there's an issue of equality. But those who contribute more in terms of the resources are the people who often decide the outcome. So for as long as African countries and Africa contribute little in terms of finances, it will be a nice thing to talk about. But I do not see it getting any traction. What those countries are going to do is to continuously do what they've been doing all along. And until we know that the money talks, then they will continue to raise these issues and they will be heard and be ignored.
But Professor, just a week or so ago, Africa got a seat in the G20. So if that can happen, why not the Security Council seat?
Because in the Security Council, you're dealing with the exercise of power. You are dealing with the exercise of changing how Africa and how the world looks like. The G20 and also the UN, where we have a seat, are places where we can express our views. But when it comes to the issues of decisions that have to do with war, you'll find the UN Security Council not willing to budge.
So now we have the UN General Assembly meeting again, and it seems that almost every year, African countries sing the same song about a seat on the Security Council. What do they need to do this time to put more power behind their demands?
Well, as long as you are beggars, it doesn't matter how many times you raise the issue. It's not going to go anywhere. And African countries must know that they need to build a sort of a muscle, and that muscle must be financial. That muscle must also be economic. It must also be military. The reason why China is respected is because of its economic strength and its military power. So Africa does not have that. And I don't think those who control the power in the world are willing to just let go like that. So this matter, we are going to raise it until we have come together as a strong continent. At the moment, Africa is still a continent of beggars. And when you're no longer a beggar, you then will demand and you will get.
Professor Sipho Sipe is a political analyst and former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg. In the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, the army has announced the release of 94 hostages, including 29 women, from the ADF rebels after months of captivity. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Hazuke, spokesperson for joint operations, says the pressure of the military operations by the DRC and Ugandan troops against the ADF led to the release. More with our reporter Zane Neti Zaide.
Visibly tired, the hostages of the ADF rebels say they traveled several kilometers in the bush before arriving in the town of Ndalia in Ituri province of the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Katungu Mwiru says she was kidnapped when the ADF attacked her community. Her release followed an operation by the DRC and Ugandan armies against one of the ADF positions. She says she was kidnapped in Ituri in the village of Luemba and she had just spent a year in the bush. The rebels found her in the field and took her, so she went with them deep into the bush. They divided up the captives. Some went to one camp and others went to another. Then the army launched offensives against them, and that's how she got away. Anwarit Biwaga Mwavita was abducted with her father-in-law in the Ido area. She says she spent 6 months in the hands of ADF. She says the rebels arrived when her husband was out collecting his phone. She was there with her father-in-law, and he saw them, and as she came out of the chicken, they grabbed her. Where she was out walking in the fields every day, and they promised to let them go, but it wasn't true. She says she is very grateful to the government and to God, because thanks to them, she got out of there. The spokesman for joint FRDC-UPDF operations, Lieutenant Kana Makazukai, calls on the rebels to lay down their arms and surrender. He also calls on people to welcome the hostages and rebels who are leaving the bush. He says, may these rebels surrender. Let them surrender because there are no two ways about it. Both armies have subscribed to all human rights resolutions. If they surrender, they will be treated humanly. He asks the population not to take revenge. They must welcome these ex-hostages well. The ADF, Alliance des Forces Démocratiques, is allied with the Islamic State militants. It is among the largest of the dozens of rebel groups in the eastern DRC. The ADF also has roots in Uganda and has staged attacks over nearly two decades. Since 2021, the DRC and Ugandan armed forces have been conducting joint operations against the ADF in the eastern DRC. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Netizaidi.
More than 3 million patients worldwide died every year due to unsafe care that they receive from a hospital, caregivers, or family. This is according to the World Health Organization, which says at least 1 in 10 patients experience harm in healthcare facilities. And as the nations mark World Patient Day, Safety Day today, Monday, the WHO says most patient harm is preventable. Maureen Odhiambo reports.
World Patient Safety Day, held every September 17th, was established to increase public awareness and engagement, enhance global understanding, and work towards global solidarity and action to promote safety in healthcare. The World Health Organization, under this year's theme, Engaging Patients for Patient Safety and Elevate the Voice of Patients, has developed patient and family engagement to advance safety in healthcare. The International Alliance of Patients Organization, or IAPO, says hospitals should be a safer space for patients. Dani Motsi is the Alliance Interim Chief Executive Officer.
Hospitals should be a safe environment where patients come to get better. Adverse events also happen in primary care, where 4 in 10 patients are harmed in outpatient care globally. We need to engage patients at all levels of decision-making so they can actively participate in the strengthening of patient safety processes and institutions.
WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus said patient safety is a collective responsibility and that healthcare systems must work together with patients, families, and communities so patients can be informed advocates in their own care. Motsi says the Patient Alliance is committed to ensuring patients are empowered and have the knowledge to participate in the care process.
We are very proud of our involvement with the World Health Organization in their Global Patient Safety Action Plan, in which for the first time, patient and family engagement was given a prominent place in the co-creation and co-production of healthcare.
Patient harm is the 14th leading cause of global disease burden compared with diseases such as tuberculosis and malaria. In Africa, WHO statistics show that probability of being harmed in a hospital is higher, and the risk of acquiring an infection from healthcare is as much as 20 times higher than the global rate. In countries such as Kenya, the government commended the tireless efforts of patients, caregivers, and healthcare workers in advancing safe healthcare practices. Speaking virtually, Kenya's Health Cabinet Secretary Susan Nakhumicha says patient safety remains essential in the country's pursuit for universal health coverage.
Kenya has made significant strides in patient safety through institutionalization of patient safety within the Ministry of Health, as well as formulating policies on infection prevention and control and antimicrobial resistance to safeguard patient well-being. Furthermore, we have developed a national policy on patient and health worker safety.
The WHO surveyed member states on how they are implementing the Global Patient Safety Action Plan. The interim results show that only 13% of responding countries have a patient representative on the governing board in most of their hospitals. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's portion. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with women football. Reigning champions Asfar from Morocco and South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns will form part of a new exciting lineup of teams that have qualified for this year's CAF Women's Champions League final to be played in Cote d'Ivoire between the 5th to the 19th of November 2023. The CAF Women's Champions League is a premium women's club football competition and will be on its third installment. Hurricanes FC from Equatorial Guinea completed a lineup of teams this weekend when they won the UNIFAC qualifier, defeating regional holders TP Mazembe to secure their tickets to Cote d'Ivoire, and this will be their first appearance. In rugby news, defending champions South Africa flexed their muscles in merciless style as they ran in 12 tries in the 76-0 demolition of Romania in their Rugby World Cup Group B meeting at Bordeaux on Sunday. Scrum half Kabuz Irenach scored a first-half hat-trick as the Springboks secured their offensive bonus point after just 11 minutes. Wing Makazole Mapimpi also dotted down in the first half, completing his own treble with two in quick succession in the second period. Here's a reaction from Springbok coach Jack Nyamba after their second victory at the ongoing Rugby World Cup.
So internally, we had massive respect for Romania, and we really gave them a lot of attention during the week. In a World Cup, there's pressure to execute. So, yeah, but we will probably pick up certain things that they didn't execute that well, and we'll work on that.
In athletics, 5 world record holders in the 6th championships event are among the entries for the inaugural World Athletics Road Running Championships, Riga 23, on the 1st of October. In the road mile, Kenya's Faith Kipyegon could add her name to that world record list as she makes her road race debut and closes one of the greatest seasons any athlete has ever compiled. The multiple world and Olympic champion has already set world records in the 1,500 meters mile and 5,000 meters on the track in 2023. And now to handball news, where Tunisia's under-18 handball team defeated Algeria 29-16 after the 19th Africa Women's Youth Handball Championship Group A Day 2 game played on Sunday in Monastery. Nigeria lost their second match also on Sunday to Guinea with a 23-20 defeat. Nigeria will next play host Tunisia on Tuesday. In other games played on Sunday, Angola won their match against DR Congo 37-13, while Egypt thrashed Morocco 40-12. And now to badminton. Egypt is set to serve as the first host of the 2024 Para-Badminton World Circuit as it is scheduled to stage the opening event of the year. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, September 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Button, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.